Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
Well, there we go. Tanay Kulkarni. What an absolute delight of a young gent and so driven.
Oh, I'll tell you what, if you could one of those ones we talked about, Essence of Jordan, you know, if you could Essence of Tanay and say to people, have a whiff of this to inspire, you know, if ever, and I'm a bit of an old duffer, you had doubts about the younger generation, dispelled by that young man,
I
tell you.
Dentistry is in very good hands.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
His approach to being very strategic and having great clarity, but it not being limiting.
No.
I think young people who are just entering the profession will take a lot from it, but also I think it's inspiring for people that have been in the profession for a while because it shows the quality of what the profession has to look forward to in the future. Remarkable guy. I think people will love that episode.
I thought it was brilliant. Really good.
So a very, very special episode today.
It is our youngest podcast guest. Look at that. I'm excited. It's really good fun.
So today
we've had all the old duffers. We've now got the future.
Exactly. So today we've got the self-confessed young duffer. He is a final year dental student at KCL. He's the past president of KCL Dental Society and a partner at Bryant Dental. And he's only just turned 23.
I say, flip. That's so good. I was a serial non-achiever at 23, according to that.
So welcome to Tanay Kulkarni. How are you, Tanay?
Very well. Thank you, Andy and Chris, for having me on. I was pretty surprised when I got the invitation. I'm not sure I've done anything to warrant a spot on the pod, but we'll see how it goes. Thanks for
Thank you for saying yes.
But the way this works is that we feel that one of the things that we want to bring is kind of that breadth of all that dentistry has to offer. Mm. And it's the Business of Dentistry podcast. But the things you've already done, and we'll come on to kind of the business side of what you've been doing with Bryant Dental a bit later, you already pre-qualify. But a lot of people that listen to this either are interested in dentistry as a career, they may be fairly new into dentistry, or there might be people who have been in for a long while. And I think even for the people that have been in for a long while, you sometimes forget what it was like at the beginning. So I think you're going to kind of bookend where we are, because we've had lots of people that are towards the end of their career and they may have been in the profession for 30 or 40 years, and your fresh eyes at the beginning, I think it's going to be a fascinating insight on where you see the profession, what your very recent university experience is like, but also through your work with Bryant Dental on the AI side of things, your thoughts in terms of where that the profession could be going.
Young mind looking at the future. Yeah. I think it's going to be fascinating.
No, it's going to be brilliant.
So don't disappoint us.
No pressure.
Yeah, there we go.
But I find it fascinating because we've not known one another that long, but you strike me as somebody who's kind of embedded in the dental community. And you've managed to already achieve that, and you've still got one foot in Kings, in that you've got literally a couple of weeks to do and you're out in the big wide world. Did somebody say to you when you were young the importance of community and building relationships, or was that something that was just instinctive for you?
I think very early on I was actually quite introverted. I was quite a shy kid. I was always involved in a lot of things, playing a lot of sport, doing quite a variety of different things. However, I was quite shy, and you know, my social skills were possibly lacking quite a bit. But what I did have was a lot of exposure to people around me, such as my parents, parents of some of my friends, my grandfather as well, who were great networkers. They were very, very good with people, very chatty, always a life of the party. Found it very easy to get on with a lot of people, and you know, I think just being surrounded by that and absorbing a lot of that naturally filtered into my personality as I grew a bit older, grew in confidence. And now I find it quite interesting to meet a lot of different people. I feel quite comfortable talking to a lot of different people. It wasn't necessarily an active decision or an active kind of strategy to network a lot and gain insights from a lot of people, but it was a natural progression. And I think you and I, Andy, we've got to know each other a little bit over the last year or so. And yourself as well, I think, you know, you're someone who a lot of people know within the profession. And I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that you're so giving and you're so forthcoming. You give a lot of people a time of day. And I think that's something which is truly, you know, quite important.
He's very good at that.
I think you're right. And what I kind of heard is there's a curiosity. That's it, I think, isn't it? I think if there's a curiosity to talk to people, to find out new stuff, your network falls out of that, and that's how you build your relationships, because you strike me as someone who's genuinely interested in people and learning new stuff.
What did your parents do?
Both my parents are doctors. It's quite funny, okay, actually. Right, my family tree, the last three or four generations, everyone has been surgeons. So dentistry, I guess, is in the surgical field, but I'm probably breaking the mold ever so slightly.
So what happened there? Did you make a conscious decision that said, I didn't want to do that, I want to be dentist? Or did you want to do something else, like, I don't know, a plumber or something? And everyone went, oh, no. So nothing against plumbers, if anyone, plumbers, happen to be listening. It's just a factor.
I saw the lifestyle that my parents were living. It was quite intense as doctors. You know, your dad was on call for a while when he was working in hospital, you know, leaving and coming back in very early hours in the morning, etc. And it seemed like a lot of hard work for very little output in comparison. Mm. I did toy with the idea of medicine. I was always good at the sciences. I enjoyed that side of things. And I was also quite fascinated with finance as well. So I did a bit of work experience at a fund or in a couple of banks when I was 15 or 16. And at that time, that experience didn't really appeal to me. Spent a lot of time sitting, you know, stationary at a desk, watching a line go up and down on a graph, a lot of numbers ticking over and thinking, "This, I'm not sure I can do this for the rest of my life." I actually did working experience in a hospital with a doctor. And after a week or so, he sat me down and said, "Are you sure you want to do medicine?" And I said, "You know what, honestly, not really. I'm only here because I can't see
you.
A clear direction."
Good.
So eventually what happened was he pulled me to the side and said, "Look, a lot of my mates are dentists. They've been able to do what I've done, but a lot quicker. And they've got a lot more freedom at a young age." And I thought, you know, amalgamation between healthcare and finance, if you decide to go down the business side of things in dentistry, dentistry fits both of those quite well. Wow. And it wasn't, you know, at 18 years old, you don't really know who you are. You don't really know what you want to be doing. But it seemed like a logical choice at that time. In terms of input versus output, it's quite disproportionately weighted compared to medicine. Wow.
That's very grown up thinking.
Yeah,
I have this thing that I think it's incredibly hard to put teenagers into a position where you've got, you know, that kind of
the future.
Just growing up isn't easy as a teenager. And then we say to teenagers when they're sort of 14, 13, 14, 15, right, you now need to choose subjects that's going to put you on a career path for the future. So to have that kind of presence of mind and that thought process when you did.
But also that pretty pressure. That, I mean, I don't know whether there was, I don't know what your mum and dad were like. Were they sort of in your ear about medicine, or were they like pretty cool?
Pretty easygoing. They were pretty chilled out, actually. Yeah, my mum actually told me, "Do anything but medicine, and you'll be all right." But I thought dentistry was quite good because it's a profession where, from a young age, you can carve it into whatever you want to carve it into. Day one out of dental school, if you wanted to, you could buy a practice. I'm not sure that's necessarily the most smart thing to do, but you can.
Yeah.
And you can be off and running, and you know, you can make mistakes early and grow quickly. Whereas in medicine, it's a long, long route before you end up with that privilege.
Who was the guest that we had? I can't remember. There was a guest we had, which is a similar. They went and did work experience and Max Facts. Do you remember? And they said, sod that, because it was like ridiculous hours and no quality of life. And then they did work in work experience in a general dental practice. Can you remember?
Yeah, I can't remember.
And they sort of said, I can do this because I've got almost like I got a finite working time. I can control the environment I'm in, and it's a similar sort of way that you took that decision. It's similar. Bugger that. I'm going to try and know a bit more. I can't remember who it was.
No, was it Richard Marks, possibly?
I can't honestly remember it. It was someone I could just remember them saying.
I think it was further back than that.
Yeah, they did Max Facts, and then just thought, whilst it was fascinating, they didn't really fancy the idea of people's faces being ripped open. and they didn't like the hours. And then someone said, "Well, why don't you try a general dentist?" I can't remember.
Put them on the path.
And that was it, Which is interesting. I mean, I think it's a great conscious decision to make, really.
Yeah.
Very grown up, and you know, 18 or whatever.
Absolutely. So you grew up in Birmingham.
Shoes to wear at 18.
Yeah, decided to come to KCL in London. Was that for the dental school, or was it the lure of London, or is it that you just wanted a bit of separation between your parents and giving you some space to grow up?
And you can be honest.
All of the above. Oh, London's a great place, isn't it? Big, yeah. Bright lights, lots of energy, and lots of diversity. It's great. And King's, the way I saw, I didn't really read into it too much, but King's at the time seemed to be the most prestigious dental school. So that was essentially my decision-making process. London for the fun times, in King's because it's got the big glossy name.
Right, yeah.
Those of you who didn't go to King's, please don't turn off.
And obviously you've literally just qualified, so congratulations on that.
Almost.
By the time this goes out, the congratulations will be due. For somebody that literally is just coming to the end of it, what have been your highs and lows? What were the things that exceeded your expectations and the bits that you found incredibly tough?
I think the positives of being in London as a dental student is that you get to be exposed to a lot of the profession from a very, very early age. So right from the first year, I was involved in, you know, a couple of societies, BACD, different organisations, etc., and met loads and loads of really, really cool people at the top of their game within the profession. And for me, that was super eye-opening because I've got no family in dentistry. I didn't really know many dentists growing up. And seeing the community around the profession, which is, you know, very different to a lot of other professions out there, it seemed pretty unique, and that was awesome. That was really, really cool to get involved with right from day one. Also, the trials and tribulations of dental school have been quite exciting to be involved with, both socially and also the course itself. You meet a lot of cool people, and that's been the main thing. I think if you boil it down, just the breadth of exposure I've had to different types of people at different stages in their life has been the main takeaway. Whether that's within dentistry or also with teams and sports and other bits and bobs that are going on at uni, it's been a lot of fun. And also dental school these days, I think, is maybe not as rigorous as it was in the past. So I've had a really, really good time.
Yeah. Did you stay in, did King's have halls or did
they
you?
They do, yeah. So year one, I was at the infamous GDS for any other King's grads,
right.
Which is great because it's a 5-minute walk away from campus. So you can live the pretty chilled out life. I think getting involved in the sports teams pretty early was awesome. Played a lot of cricket and hockey at uni.
Where did you end up moving out to in after the first year?
About 5 yards away. I live in the block of flats right next door to GDS with a couple of mates. So it's,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Kept it local.
That's it. Once a GDS local. Man, always a GDS man.
Good planning.
Did you, there's lots of talk generally amongst sort of dental students and younger dentists that whether you get enough hands-on experience in dental school. And there seems to be a kind of a leaning towards kind of defensive dentistry, form-filling, note-taking, but that might be at the cost of the clinical experience. How did you find that?
Yeah, I mean, quite possibly. We hear a lot from people who graduated a while ago that, you know, their dental school experience is very different. They were far more stuck in than we were. However, I've never experienced that, so there was no comparable at all.
Yeah.
For me, we actually were affected by COVID pretty early on. So we were meant to start seeing patients in second year. We went into lockdown on a Friday. That Monday, the following Monday morning, was when we went to see our first patient. So then it was another 18 months before we actually got involved with anything. That being said, it was okay because we came out in third year on the back end of COVID, and we had 2.5 years or so of clinical exposure. Look, I think meeting a lot of dentists who have graduated through loop sales and other bits and bobs since second year, what I've learned from them is that you do all of your hands-on, your learning in your FD anyway, in your foundation year afterwards.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really too bothered, you know, as long as you understand the basic principles and whatever limited exposure you have, as long as you try and maximize that, it sets you in pretty good stead for when you see a lot more patients in that foundation year.
Can I ask you a question on note taking? It was only we went to this thing called the Global Dental Collective.
Yeah.
The only reason I remember was GDC. And one of the things that was coming out with GDC and, you know, note taking and stuff like that, but they had some software that effectively you could dictate your clinical notes. And all I was wondering is that something they teach you in dental school that you know, use this software, or do they just say, you know, write the notes? Do they give you sort of ways of helping you with the note taking?
Not really. I think note taking, there's no real education on that at all at King's anyway. I'm not sure about other universities. Really? Our exposure really is when we're on clinics, when we're presenting to our tutors. they'll have a read through our notes and give us pointers on where to change it, add some meat to the bone, etc. But that varies from tutor to tutor. There's no formal centralized teaching on that, actually, no.
Wow. I just think it's an interesting one, isn't it, that everyone's on about having notes, and then, you know, the dentist that we talk to, they sort of moan about the fact of the young guys, their defensive dentistry, they're really good at taking notes.
It's going to come, isn't it?
You'd have thought it's a fundamental of saying, look, if we want to empower you to be better dentists, to have more time with your patients, we should sort of give you the tools to be able to do that. It just seems a bit odd.
I mean, we'll come on to what you're doing with Bryant Denton on the tech side, but it's going to come, isn't it? In the future, that will probably form part of how students are.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, dentistry as a whole, because it is a profession where our hands are kind of in many fingers and many pies at the same time, we're essentially forced to be polymaths. Mm. But as a result, I think we're a little bit behind the curve compared to a lot of other professions in adopting new technologies and new systems, etc. So we'll see how it changes, how it shapes up over the next few years. But yeah, I'm pretty excited.
You seem a very clear thinker, and you kind of have a plan of kind of where you're going and what you're doing. But thinking about your university experience, if you could go back and change anything, would you? would you go back and change anything that you've done?
Yes and no. I think in second year, I spent a lot of time running around the country, selling loops, and spending maybe only 2 weeks a night in my flat in London. The rest was in hotels all over the place, which was great because it's put me in the position I am in now. However, it would have been, if I could go back, maybe experience a bit more of the uni life at that time would have been fun. But I've made up for it in space, don't worry.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Squeeze it into a short period of time.
You must have to be super disciplined, I'd imagine, if you're doing that and the temptation of being in a hotel room and just like turning on TV and getting room service, as opposed to maybe doing studying and notes. It must have been quite a challenge, I'd imagine.
I think it was okay. We had very little contact time at the time, so we had online lectures, everything recorded, watch at our own pace. Pretty relaxed until 2 weeks before exams, but it's okay.
And then you're like,
that's it. Plenty of coffee and Red Bulls.
I was going to say, like everybody all over the world.
That's it, exactly.
We'll come on to the loops thing, because that's interesting in terms of where it's led you and what it's exposed you to. But before we get to that, you said that you played quite a lot of sports at uni, so that was primarily cricket and hockey. Obviously, in dentistry, there's a high degree of camaraderie. You know, when you're in a clinical environment or within a team, those people need to work together. Have you seen how you're able to use those skills and sport in dentistry already, or is that a bit too early to say that you've seen that link?
No, for sure. I think the first line of my personal statement coming into dental school was dentistry and sports share many common themes or something like along those lines. I think a grounding in sport, for me personally, has been massive. It allows you to learn how to make decisions under pressure. You are forced to be in a team environment from day one. You go through the thin and thicker things with your peers. And that's very similar to dental environment practice. You're constantly faced by high pressurized situations. Oftentimes things go wrong and you need to be able to have a clear head and be able to make, you know, decisive action or take decisive action on a pretty regular basis. And I think sport is a great training ground to do that.
I agree, I think that there's lots of studies of what sport can learn from business and business can learn from sport, and I find it fascinating.
Batsman or bowler?
Bit of both. Yeah, that's the answer of someone who doesn't really do either.
But you play to a pretty decent standard, don't you?
Yeah, I played a little bit back in the past, like the county age group stuff, and hockey was probably my main sport. Played some regional stuff, etc. My younger brother's a much better sportsman and actually academic than I am, but we'll get on to that at some point.
Look at that sibling pressure.
Yeah, sibling rivalry already. But that's interesting. We were talking to someone else about that hand to eye coordination thing,
yes,
weren't we?
Yeah.
You know, him driving racing cars to the hand to eye coordination of what he does on dentistry. And I'm just fascinated in the fact that hockey is hand to eye sort of stuff,
absolutely,
isn't it? As well,
right? Absolutely. Yeah.
I think Samir Patel also, I know you probably had him on the pod as well. Andy, yeah. I know you know him quite well. Had a lot of conversations with him, and he was a massive sportsman, playing a lot of cricket,
yes,
you know, in his early days. And he mentioned that, you know, the leadership skills that he gained from captaining sides translated to his practice and now to his leadership academy very, very well. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of other sportsmen will probably agree that the skills that you learn playing sport right throughout your childhood can be massively, massively useful.
This episode is brought to you with our charity partner, Wells on Wheels. Did you know that many girls in Indian villages miss out on education because they have to spend hours fetching water for their families? Wells on Wheels is changing that with the water wheel invention. A water wheel is a rollable drum that can carry five times as much water as a single bucket, making it easier for adults to collect more water in a single trip without risking injury and freeing up young girls from never having to collect water again. With the help of Wells on Wheels, over 2,000 girls are now attending school regularly. Join the cause and help the lives of ambitious girls today. For just £28, a water wheel can transform their futures immediately. Learn more and donate at wellsonwheels.co.uk. Now back to the episode.
You mentioned a couple of times about selling loops while you were at dental school, and then that was for Bryant Dental, Connor's business.
Yes.
I'd love to find out more about that business and its culture and the work you're doing. But before we get to that, how did that come about? How did you end up with that involvement with Bryant Dental?
So I was in my first year at uni, and in first year, you're not really hands-on at all. It's a lot of time in lecture theatres, not much dentistry. And I was getting quite bored. So I decided to just shoot them an email. I shot them a cold email, Priam and Connor, and had an interview after my first year exams. And then went and helped out at the Birmingham Dental Show. And then they brought me on board. I just ended up selling loops throughout second and third year.
Right, yeah. I mean, for people that don't know, Bryant Dental, I always described as like the Apple of dentistry. You know, when you look at their products, the aesthetics, it's how it's presented and the design of it is incredibly sleek and it's very smart. You've obviously been with that team for quite a while because it's still a relatively young business.
Yes.
You've seen it grow up. What's the culture like in an organization like Bryant Dental?
Like with any startup, it's very free flowing, very. There's not many, you know, barriers. There's not much corporate structure or anything like that. It's a lot of times it's just fast moving. It's, you know, it's a conducive environment for a lot of innovation. It's very informal. At any point, you can have direct access to Connor, Priam, to any of the other guys. And therefore, as a result, we're very, very fast moving. So whenever, you know, you might have a conversation with a dentist that you go and see in practice, they might give you a really cool idea. Next day you bring it up, or you phone Connor or Priam, you know, that evening. And then suddenly, you know, we've got a prototype ready to go. We're testing it out, trialing it, and then something is out there. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if we can maintain that environment as we get bigger and bigger and bigger. So now we're at 60 plus employees, and, you know, that's where a lot of these bigger companies tend to struggle. So hopefully we can find a way of circumventing those issues and keeping this high-paced environment very, very innovative.
That environment probably doesn't suit everybody, does it? You've got to be of a certain mindset to cope with that fluidity and that speed of change.
Yeah, for sure. We always joke that there's something wrong with everyone that's at the company. You need to have a little bit of versatility, resilience. A lot of us in the early days, myself still, you're juggling a few things. You've got dental school going on the side, you're doing this, you know, alongside that there's a lot of other moving parts, and so we really enjoy getting people on board who are hungry and who are a little bit different and who like to be in these environments and thrive off of the, you know, the alternative way of approaching things.
Yeah, and you've also moved on from loops now in that you're looking after the AI venture, Aura.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that. What's that going to do for Bryant Dental? But also, we can move on from that and get your take in terms of where AI is heading. Because for old duffers like us, AI just sounds just like way out.
So
there.
I decided it sounds like something from Yorkshire. AI.
Very good. Essentially, we as a company want to position ourselves as problem solvers of much bigger issues than just posture with loops. We've met a lot of dentists face to face, many thousand now actually, and we realize that there are many pressing issues within the profession. The most pressing issue we felt at the time was fear of litigation, time spent on admin, taking notes, all of that taking away from the experience that you can provide for your patients and your focus on the clinical side of things. So we thought, you know, let's use a bit of tech to try and knock that on the head so dentists can, you know, enjoy being dentists and get rid of a lot of the unnecessary stresses which are in place due to, you know, inefficiencies. So that's, you know, how TapNote was born. TapNote is part one of five softwares which will all come together to form Aura. But essentially, TapNote, we spoke about notes a little bit early on.
Yeah.
But essentially with TapNote, what we're looking to do is build smart records and an AI neural network, which you can click through your appointments, click through buttons and diagrams, which will automatically generate all of your notes for you at the end of the appointment. It will generate consent forms for you. It will give you insights as a practice owner, so you can have automatic CQC audits for your note qualities, etc. So the idea is just eliminate a lot of the admin that dentists have to do, so you can get home on time, number one, and then not stress about the quality of your notes as well when you are at home.
That note-taking thing, I'd say, from we've heard it for years now, haven't we? It's such an important thing. I think if you can crack it,
yeah,
it'll be great.
Yeah,
because you concentrate being a dentist instead of arsing around doing
exactly,
all the
exactly. Yeah. Keep it fun.
Yeah,
and that's the thing, isn't it? That's the bit that people choose dentistry for. They want to work with patients. They want to, you know, keep people healthy. They want to bring about good smiles. Yeah, that's the bit you get drawn to. You don't go, oh, I'd love to go into an admin based paper intensive
that has a bit of healthcare thrown
industry.
In.
Yeah, that's not what you get drawn to, is it? So where do you see AI going? You know, perhaps more generally, but also within dentistry. You know, it seems to be kind of the flavor of the month at the moment. But I think it's way more than that, isn't it?
I think AI more generally is a massive, massive tool. I think the shift that it's going to bring about in all of our day-to-day lives is going to be absolutely tremendous. I think there are a lot of, it's going to cut a lot of the fat in many industries. I think it essentially 3 or 4 or 5x is everyone's, you know, potential output, and the productivity growth as a result is going to be crazy. We're already seeing it with, you know, the most classic example is Elon Musk at Twitter. He came in and gutted, was it 70% of the workforce, 80% of the workforce, and the company's still functioning. And AI is only going to, you know, add to that. In terms of dentistry, the most obvious application seems to be diagnosis. It's the data that we can draw. That's what we're trying to do essentially with TapNote. We're approaching it from slightly different, unconventional route. Rather than just having online clickable templates, we've built this neural network. You know, we've programmed it with a lot of dental knowledge initially, and then the idea is as more and more dentists use it, it's going to continue to learn from all of the inputs that it's getting. And then it's going to start, we're going to start seeing a lot of patterns in diagnosis and interconnections between certain symptoms that we maybe didn't know beforehand. And the applications of that going forward is essentially we can use tech to level the playing field. So no matter where you are in the world, you could have, you know, access to the same quality of diagnoses within dentistry, and that's going to, you know, level the playing field for so many people.
But in more rural areas, or perhaps where the qualification standards aren't so high, suddenly the quality of patient care just goes through the roof. You know, in well-developed Western countries where we've got access to tech and great learning environments and top-quality universities, you know, the gains are still going to be there. But in more rural parts of Africa or the Middle East or the Far East, you could see, you know, it being revolutionary.
For sure, for sure. I mean, there's that common saying, isn't it? If you give a patient to 10 dentists, you should get the same 10 diagnoses. The treatment plans might differ, but you should get the same 10 diagnoses. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And I think in the world that we live in now, that should not at all be you know, the situation that we're in. So, you know, using tech to the best of our abilities to do that should really be, you know, at the forefront of our mission.
Very it's interesting, isn't it? Because you'll have the, hopefully have the clients who will be then able to feed that data, which creates those patterns, isn't it? That's what you need, is you need the input to be able to make the output. And yeah, it's good.
What's what's ahead of you? You know, you're like, you're 23 and I'm sitting there thinking, blimey, like you've done more than me and I'm 51. This is nuts. But honestly, what's the future holding for you? You know, I know you sort of looked at, you know, there's overseas opportunities, there's continued, mm-hmm. you've got Brian, you've got your clinical career, there's the business side of dentistry, you know, your Dubai practices. How do you see it sort of mapping out over the next 10 years?
It's a really difficult question to answer. And that's something I've been contending with for a little while. I think when you're a bit younger and you're a bit more naive, it's quite clear. But then as you see more and more and more and you get exposure to a lot more, suddenly your eyes light up and yeah, you're off to the, your mind's off to the races and it's difficult to pin yourself down. So I think right now what I've tried to do is just break it down into 12 months or 18 months and just execute on what I have to in that time period. Life changes, you know, quite quickly. We've seen with AI, I mean, every week something new is coming out. Something new is, you know, the next revolutionary thing. It's very difficult to keep or predict what the world is going to look like in the coming years. So I think my job is just set a blueprint for the next 12 to 18 months and execute. So at the moment, what that looks like is, number one, finish dental school. Secondly, make the most of my foundation year. Clinically improve as much as I can. Take as many photos as I can, etc. On top of that, I've been looking at America. So I've been considering going across the States and building a career in dentistry out there. So that entails in the next 12 months, getting the board exams done, building an application and firing those off. And then also continuing to grow at Bryant. So that will be continuing to grow the software company and then get involved with a couple of other bits and bobs, fundraising, et cetera. Just build my skill set as much as I can and then reassess once all of those have been executed on.
What's the attraction of the States?
In dentistry, it just seems like the floor is a lot higher and there is no ceiling. And I think whether you're trying to reach, you know, the pinnacle of the profession in this country or the States or Australia or wherever it is, the level of input that you need to put in is going to be pretty equitable. But then the returns, I think, are outsized in the States, not just financially, but in terms of what you're able to build, the speed at which things can be built. It's a lot more, I think, exciting than where we are currently, but that may change.
Do you see your career in the future being a mixture of clinical and business? Do you see yourself kind of moving away from clinical more to business or getting deeper into clinical and business being on the side? How do you see that sort of split coming down the line?
It's really too early to say, but I do know for sure that it will be a combination of both of them. I think a really good thing about dentistry is that it allows you to be at multiple levels of impact. Multiple stages of impact, you might say. So I know I want to have breadth of impact for sure, and that will come from something more upstream, so maybe owning multiple practices or having business, etc. But then the unique thing about dentistry is that you can be much closer to you know, the actual deliverance of that impact clinically. So you can be sitting there and, you know, changing a patient's life from 9 till 1 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, and then in the evening you're doing something on a much bigger scale. And that diversity of impact that you can have is something which is super super unique to dentistry, and I think it will be great to have a combination of both.
And I agree with you. I think as a profession, I think the opportunities are enormous. You know, you could just go
doors.
Well, yeah, you get some people just go deep into their clinical work and they just live their lives as an associate, and they're amazing. They're amazing clinicians. They've built incredible relationships with their team and their patients, and they're content, and that's great. And you get other people who within a couple of years want this portfolio of practices. They spend a lot of time wearing a suit and a tie in front of finance guys building for the next one. They're both right. There's not a wrong or a right. There's a phrase which you should learn from your mistakes, which I think is a crap phrase. I think you should always learn from somebody else's. So for somebody who's fairly new in, if you did this again, what would you do differently?
I would maybe take on a little bit less and then really dial in on those 2 or 3 things as opposed to taking on 5 and maybe only achieving 70% or so in each. I think having a breadth of exposures and a breadth of different things that you're getting involved in is great, but then you also need to build a spike in 1 or 2 areas And I don't think I've necessarily done that just yet, but luckily I think I've got a bit of time on my hands to fix that.
I had a great conversation with Simon Chard, and Simon had a phrase, and he said he spent his 20s saying yes to things so he could say no to things in his 30s. And it's similar to what you're saying. And I think there's an element of you need to say yes to enough things to work out what you like and what you don't like, so that the good things are allowed to happen. And it sounds like you might have just got there quicker than some.
Maybe. Or maybe I don't know what I don't know yet.
But then naivety is a superpower.
It is indeed.
Honestly, I think there's a risk that if we genuinely knew, and particularly when you're working in an area like AI, you know, you want to go in with such a fluid state and such an open mind that nothing's off limits. And I think the danger is if you don't have that freshness, there's a risk that you'll miss something.
You get locked in, don't you?
Yeah, and you can get into analysis paralysis, can't you? You can overthink a lot of things and you lose your ability to be dynamic.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're on an amazing path, Tanner. It really does. I think you've got so much energy, the connections you've built, and just your clarity of thought of where you are and where you see the profession going. You've really benefited from the connections you've got, and I think it's given you a great foundation to push forward.
I think that's just a testament to how many great people there are in the profession and how forthcoming they are with information and their time. I think these days we're in a very privileged position this early on in our career, because we have access to everyone through social media, etc. I think that's how we first got in touch, over Instagram. Back in the day, that's not something that people had the privilege of having. So it's been awesome, and it works both ways, but it's been awesome. Yeah,
I was going to say, I take credit yourself, because people are available. You know, you still need to reach out to them. You still need to initiate that contact, and you still need to be interested and curious to kind of take it forward. And I agree. I think it is a very welcoming profession. I think in our experience, you know, people are very kind. They're very helpful. But the flip to that is you do need to put yourself out there for it. You know, if you just if you don't initiate contact, everybody's busy. So they're doing their own thing, and they don't mean to ignore you. But if people aren't asking, but when you do ask, people tend to be very, very, very kind and helpful.
Yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to look stupid once. You don't look stupid ever again. It's quite a nice way of looking at it, I think.
Yeah, Tanner, we always ask our guests the same two questions at the end, and we're very interested to see what your answers would be. So, if you were given the opportunity to be the fly on a wall in a situation, so you're just sitting up on the wall watching a scenario play out, where would that be, and who would be in the room?
I think one that's quite on topic at the moment is the Elizabeth Holmes Theranos situation.
Ah, okay, yeah.
It would have been pretty cool to be a fly on the wall. A lot of those board meetings,
Is this before it all went wonky?
Well, at all stages of it, it'd be awesome.
trying to frog it to Walgreens or wherever.
Exactly. It would have been really cool to see number one at the beginning. I personally believe that she probably thought it was possible. And then as things went on, that slowly diminished. And then at what point did she realise, actually, this is...
The lie got too big.
Exactly. And she wasn't dealing with, you know, with people who weren't educated on the topics. I mean, she was dealing with seriously sophisticated investors, and, you know, people like Rupert Murdoch and Larry Ellison, etc. So how these people didn't manage to realise what was going on, there's a lot more going on than, you know,
it's
what,
a bit
what
Emperor's New Clothes, isn't it? You know, it's the same thing. Everyone else says it's great, so it must be great.
And the problem is that, you know, the names that you gave, you know, if you approached with an idea and you heard that Rupert Murdoch was involved, you would assume there's due diligence being done. I mean, he's an amazing entrepreneur. He wouldn't be backing a project that was so ludicrous.
Yeah,
you can see how these things kind of snowball.
Definitely. For sure.
Yeah, I think it's a great answer. And our follow-up is, if you could meet somebody, so you can sit down and have a beer or a glass of wine or a coffee with somebody, who would you like to sit across the table from?
Tricky one to answer. There's a lot of people out there I'd love to have a chat with. I'm going to cheat and give you two. Number one, for everyone who's a cricket fan, there's one guy you'd like to meet, Virat Kohli. Quality guy, quality player, on and off the pitch. What I really respect about him is that on the pitch, he's an incredible competitor, fierce competitor, lots of energy, leads a team with you know, a lot of ferocity. But then off the pitch, he's super humble, down to earth. And I think having that balance. You know, when you are in the zone, whether that's life, business, whatever it is, it's game on. But then equally, you can turn it off and know how to relax and live a rounded life. I think there's a lot to learn from someone like him. And then the other person would be Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan's seems like a pretty fun dude, and he knows a little bit about everything. And I think someone like that, it's difficult to get a lot from a single meeting or single conversation with anyone. But I think someone like Joe, he knows so much about so many things. You could probably, whatever rabbit hole you end up down, it'll be quite fun.
Yeah, he'd know something about it, for sure. Tanay, it's been a joy. Honestly, I think I just love the energy and the approach you have. I think, you know, regardless of where people are at in their career, I think they can look to you and be inspired by what you've done already, but also the outlook you have for the future. I think we can all take something from that. So thank you very much indeed for joining us. It's been really, really enjoyable.
Really means a lot. And thanks once again for having me on. It's a privilege.
Not at all. No, and I'm very confident about it. This episode will go out in a few weeks' time, and by then you will have finished dental school.
Unless they find something to hold me back on it, we'll see.
Not at all.
Let's not go there.
Look after yourself, Tanay. Keep well.
Thanks very
much. Take care, guys. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.